You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network. Attention all theater lovers! This Sunday, April 21st, Broadway Podcast Network is holding the first ever Broadway Podfest, a full day of podcast recordings with some of your favorite Broadway stars, live from the Museum of Broadway, which is right in the heart of Times Square. The day begins at 11 a.m. Eastern and features a full day of programming that you don't want to miss. Visit bpn.fm/podfest to get all the details and register to attend for free. That's bpn.fm/podfest.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the fabulous Feinstein's 54 Below. Before we get started this evening, just a polite reminder. Please take this moment to silence your cell phones. Also, there is no flash photography, please. Thank you, and enjoy the show. Ladies and gentlemen, Mary Lou Henner.
Welcome back to the Feinstein's 54 Below podcast, where we take you behind the scenes of Broadway's Supper Club. I'm Nella Vera, the Director of Marketing. Our guest today is a star of TV, film, and The Great White Way. On Broadway, she has appeared in Over Here, Pal Joey, Social Security, Chicago, and most recently, Getting the Band Back Together. She was also part of the national tour casts of Grease and Annie Get Your Gun. She began her film career in 1977 with Between the Lines and has since appeared in Cannonball Run 2, Johnny Dangerously, L.A. Story, and Noises Off, among many other films. She has also appeared in TV shows such as Evening Shade, Batman the Animated Series, and Brooklyn Nine-Nine. Most notably, she starred in the classic 80s TV series Taxi.
Hi, it's Mary Lou Henner, and I'm so excited because you are listening to the best podcast, Feinstein's 54 Below podcast.
Mary Lou Henner, welcome to the Feinstein's 54 Below podcast.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited about doing my show. I can't tell you. But it's so funny when people introduce what they say, you know, what movies they pick out and everything else. And what, you know, it's like I'm always fascinated by what the choices are to say, you know, of the things that I've done.
I know. We should probably ask you which ones you prefer.
It doesn't matter.
But these are all beloved titles.
Yeah.
I have a question about your earliest theatrical experiences. In 1971, you originated the role of Marty in the first ever production of Grease.
Right.
At Kingston Mines in Chicago.
The Kingston Mines Company Store was the exact title of the theater. And it was actually a converted trolley barn. And it was such a crazy experience. Is that what you were going to ask me?
Yeah, go ahead.
Well, what happened was I had a very unusual upbringing because my family had a dancing school in our garage and a beauty shop in our kitchen and art classes going on upstairs and a cat hospital on the roof. And my uncle also did astrology readings. He lived up there with 10 cats, 2 dogs, 2 birds, a skunk, 150 fish, and his boyfriend, Charles. And so he was the art teacher,
goodness.
Catholic school next door. We had backstage passes to Catholicism. I talk about this in the show, too, and about how I grew up, because it was such an unusual way to grow up.
Yeah.
But as a result, people would call the dance studio, because we had 200 students between the ages of 2 and 80, including the nuns from the Catholic school next door who came over for stretch classes. You know, little community theater groups and high schools would call the house, the dancing school, and say, we need 12 kids for The King and I. And it's like, pick me, you know.
Yeah.
We need 2 kids for South Pacific. Pick me, pick me. So I grew up in the Chicago theater system and did a lot of productions. And when I was 15 years old, I met somebody who a couple years later called me and said, Henner, I've written the show. It may never get off the ground. I wrote it about the kids I went to high school with. You're younger than I am, but you've got that Chicago energy. And he said, it's called Grease. We're going to perform it in this converted trolley barn, Kingston Mines. So come to the first rehearsal. So I went to the first rehearsal, and there were 2 stacks of papers about 12 inches tall, about between 9 and 12 inches tall. One of them was songs, and the other one was scenes. So he passed out the papers, and it was like, here's the book report scene. Let's read the polio shot scene, the pajama party scene, the beauty school scene, and, you know, all these different scenes. And we fashioned it into Grease.
So
I did the original production, and the show was going to, some people from New York saw it, and they wanted to bring it to Broadway, and I thought, no way is this going to be a hit, because this is such a Chicago show.
Yeah.
It was 75% book and 25% music, and it just felt so Chicago. So anyway, What happened was people took it to New York. I was asked to come and audition, and I said I was going to the University of Chicago on 4 scholarships. My father had just passed away, and I didn't want to leave Chicago. But then when I saw the show on a school trip to come to visit Jim and the other people that I knew, I wanted to kick myself, like, oh my gosh, this is so great. Yeah. So then when the national company came up, he asked me to come and audition, and I threw my books in the car on my way to the library and went to the airport and auditioned and got the part.
Amazing. And then you did it on the road for how long?
I did it, well, then I came, I did it for, well, it was not even a year. And then I came to New York as we were switching over theaters in Chicago. And they were cast, I met a girlfriend of mine who was playing Frenchie on the road and then Ellen March. And she had me meet her at a theater. And I went there and they were auditioning for Over Here. So I auditioned for Over Here and I got that too.
Oh,
so
great.
The first two jobs that I had in my career were very easy to get. And then, of course, there's always the struggle after that.
Fantastic.
But I did Chicago. I did Grease on Broadway too. I did seven. I've done seven Broadway shows altogether.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
That is the best story ever.
Yeah, just right place at right time. It's really funny.
Well, and also if you're seeing Grease for the first time and never seen it before, you'd think, is this a Broadway show that is
true.
Totally valid?
Yeah, totally.
You know?
Well,
you
yes.
Never
and,
know,
oh,
I
and
guess.
It was so different. I mean, they did a revival of it a few years ago to just see what it was like. And I mean, there were so many goofy songs that they would never have worked on Broadway.
Mm-hmm.
And so many inappropriate things that probably still wouldn't have even worked then.
Absolutely.
Forget about being
absolutely.
PC now, you know.
Interesting.
And it was tough. It was like so much swearing. They really sanitized it. And the original Broadway company was a lot more swearing than what you see recently.
Well, I guess high schools across America, you had to tone it down.
Right away. Yeah, of course. And it's so different from the movie. But so when the movie came out, they really changed, they brought some of the songs into the Broadway company the next time they did it.
And,
things like that.
Love it.
So it changed
a
lot.
Yeah. In 1977, you made your film debut alongside newcomers at the time, Jeff Goldblum, Lindsay Krause, Jill Eikenberry, John Hurd, in Between the Lines.
Yes.
And I know that when it was released, it didn't make a huge splash. But then as time has gone on, this movie has become very popular.
A little bit of a cult classic.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I was so flattered because here I was, this University of Chicago girl, and even though I was doing, Broadway in Grease and stuff, I played a stripper. The first thing I ever did on film, really, was I playing the stripper. It was like, ooh, thanks. You think I could, be, sexy enough to do that? It was like, oh, yeah, wow. So I did research. I'm a real research person. So
that's so funny. Did you go to strip clubs?
I did. I went to strip clubs. But more than even going to strip clubs, I interviewed a lot of the girls, and that's where a lot of my lines came from as the character, because one of them told me that she a certain power she feels up there, and she also, her mother makes her clothes. So I told Joan McLean Silver that. I had all this research, and she said, oh, I love that. Use that as a line and everything.
That's hilarious.
Yeah.
When I was in college, I worked at a strip club.
Oh, you did?
Phones.
Oh!
Because it was a comedy
we have a good
club
voice.
Slash strip club.
Uh-huh.
So the strip club was upstairs, the comedy club was downstairs, or maybe it was vice versa. And I would have to remember which line was which, because I had to pick up and be like, hi, Comedy Cafe.
Right.
And then, hi, Archibald's.
So I had to remember
which
one. Sure.
And then
sure.
People would say, and what's your name? And I would just make up the craziest name and be like, my name is Bambi. And
they loved that. Oh, we got Bambi.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I was like, what are sexy names? Like Vanessa, Sophia. Just come up with these crazy,
right?
Sexy
that's so
names.
Funny. I love that.
But I remember the girls, a lot of them were GW, George Washington University students.
Yeah.
It was in D.C. And they were just, there to pay their way through school.
Absolutely.
They were lovely girls. They were funny.
And they liked to dance.
They liked
feel
to
sociable.
Dance.
And I was surprised.
It was pretty clean. It was kind of a upscale. It was in the business district, so kind of like the Wall Street of D.C.
Right.
So, it was just like a lot of lunchtime crowds.
Right.
But interesting.
Yeah. That's funny.
Did you know?
You want to hear something funny about the day that I flew, that I shot there? I did it at the Metropole. We shot the movie in New York, and I had to finish my strip thing. So I had like three pairs of eyelashes on and glitter in my eyes and everything. I immediately got into a limo and went to JFK and flew first class for the first time in my life to Venice, Italy, to shoot a ring around the collar commercial. I was in British Airways, and I was the only female in British Airways, and I looked like the girl who was hired to come out of a cake or something. I was like, so funny. So I get to Venice and then shot this commercial for Whisk detergent, which was a second and a half mood shot of Venice. I talked about this on 60 Minutes because they gave me the date, October 26, 1976, and I told myself, oh, that was a Tuesday. So anyway, so it was a second and a half mood shot of Venice, and then the gondolier singing, of love I sing, tra-la-la-la, for you've got ring around the ca-la-la. I say, my powder didn't work. It was a close-up on me. I was like a young married, you know.
That's
it's so funny.
Amazing.
But I started that journey dressed like a stripper because I didn't have time to take my
makeup
off.
And ended up as a wholesome mom.
I know.
Yeah.
Well, not mom yet. Newlywed.
Newlywed, yeah. Did you know at the time that all of those people that you were in that film with, Between the Lines, would go on to be huge stars?
Well, no, except I knew, my scenes were with Lindsay Krause and mm-hmm. John Hurt. So, of course, they already seemed like stars to me. But Jeff Goldblum, as soon as I saw that, I went, he is going to be a star for sure. And Jill Eikenberry, she was fantastic.
Oh,
and Gwen Wells, Steve Collins. Yeah, all of them.
What a great cast.
It was Jay Statham. Everybody was in there.
Yeah.
Everyone.
And, of course, you're no stranger to working with star-studded casts.
Right.
In 1978, Taxi premiered, where you starred alongside Danny DeVito, Judd Hirsch, Tony Danza, Christopher Lloyd, Carol Kane, Andy Kaufman, and so many more other mm-hmm. amazing artists. I don't think there's ever been a starrier cast than that on all of television.
That's a whole different story.
Yeah.
But, yeah. It was amazing.
Can you give us a little insight into what
sure.
it was like to be part of that cast?
Well, first of all, I had had a contract with CBS, and they were looking for a pilot for me. So I was traveling. I was in Rio, and they called and said, we have a pilot for you. And I said, I didn't want to leave Rio. And I said, I can't read it. This is before FedEx and faxing and everything. So I said, I don't know. And I said, what if I do it as a guest star? And they said, okay, great. So it was the paper chase. I had to come back. And so I was like sad that I had to leave my trip, but that was okay. So I left Rio. I went to do Paper Chase, and then I honored my contract and did a pilot for CBS. In the meantime, I was auditioning for things, and I auditioned for Taxi, but I was 10 years younger than they wanted. I was 25 at the time, and they wanted somebody who could have a 16-year-old daughter because Goodbye Girl had come out and Unmarried Woman had come out, and they liked the mother, young teenage daughter kind of thing. So they said, she's really not right for Elaine because she's too young. But the more I kept coming back, the casting director, Joel Thurm, kept saying, I'm telling you, this is the girl. She can hold her own with the guys. She's feminine. Men like her and all this other stuff. That's very complimentary. So they kept bringing me back. And then when Paper Chase tested, my little guest starring part tested higher than anybody. So they offered me a ridiculous contract. So my agents were able to say to them, look, you're going to lose her to Paper Chase. Make a decision. Because they kept bringing me back and testing me with people. Mm-hmm. And so then they finally said, okay, we'll make her Elaine. We'll give her two little kids instead of, you know, one big kid.
It was such a landmark television, nominated for 31 Emmy Awards, won 18. Mm-hmm. Including three for Outstanding Comedy Series, also nominated
three in a row. Yeah, it was fantastic. We did 112 shows and had 112 parties, and everybody wanted to hang out at Taxi.
Oh, my gosh. It was also nominated for 25 Golden Globes and won mm-hmm. four, and it's on the list of TV Guide's list of 50 greatest television shows, of course.
Yes.
It was unlike anything anyone had ever seen, in that I think it was not only just funny, but also groundbreaking, dealt with the issues
sure.
that it dealt with, like addiction, single parenthood, sexual harassment. And I remember seeing it as a little girl and loving it and maybe not understanding
why you loved it.
Yeah, or even that there were these issues that
right, sure.
were so groundbreaking for television. Do you remember if there was any pushback due to the topics that
I swear on this?
Yeah.
By any chance? Okay, the very first episode of Taxi, I don't know if you remember. We didn't do a pilot. We just did a first episode because they already had 12 on the air commitment. The very first episode was about there's a broken telephone in the garage, so everybody keeps making phone calls all over, and Judd decides to call his daughter, who's been living in South America. He hasn't seen her since she was two. And now she's going through Florida. And if he drives down to Florida, he can see her. So he does that. The guys all pile in the garage. My first day as a cabbie, so I'm sending them off and all this. And as soon as Judd sees her, he says, son of a bitch. And they did not want us to say son of a bitch, but they finally gave in. And that was the first time that word was ever used on television.
Wow.
Network TV. Yeah. There was some pushback, but our writers were from such a pedigree. I mean, they'd come from Mary Tyler Moore and Rhoda and Phyllis and all the great things, Lou Grant, everything that they had done. And so they gave them sometimes a hard time, but our guys usually won.
You know, I remember loving it. And in thinking back about it, it was the sense of friendship and family
yes.
that they had with each other. The compassion that they showed to Iggy.
Yeah. Well, that was supposed to be. I mean, he came in. He was in the 8th episode of First Year.
And that's Christopher Lloyd. Right?
Christopher yeah. Lloyd. And mm-hmm. it was called Paper Marriage. And he was in 2 scenes. I mean, he came in. He was a friend of Bobby Wheeler, you know, Jeff Conaway's character. He brought him. And he was so other. And he had worked with Danny DeVito, of course. Chris Lloyd had worked with Danny DeVito in Cuckoo's Nest. So he came in and was so unbelievable as a character that they said, next year, that's yeah. it. He's got to become a regular.
It was just such a beautiful show.
It was.
Did you know early on that it was going to be so special?
Well, I knew from the writing that it was special. For the first 4 years, I was the only female there, so I would plan my outfit before I went to bed every single night. I was like, okay. I knew it was going to be special because the show premiered on September the 12th, 1978. It was a Tuesday. And the following Friday, September 15th, we were all in New Orleans for the Ali Spinks fight. I had gone there with John Trolt because we were seeing each other at the time, and we had flown there for the fight, and the taxi guys were all going with our producers. So we were all walking down the street, and Johnny wasn't with us. It was just the cast. And when people started honking their horns and going like, Nardo, Louie, and all this, I thought,
oh my gosh.
That's it. Our lives have changed.
Wow.
You know, people really recognized something
just
special.
And the fact that
we were all together, from one episode.
Incredible.
Mm-hmm.
In that show, you were the object of Louis's lust, I remember.
I hope so.
It's amazing.
He's so, one of the sexiest people I've ever met in my entire life. He's adorable, Danny. He's fabulous.
It's amazing that the show kind of was addressing Me Too issues before it was a thing.
That's true.
At the time, did you have any doubts about the storyline? I mean, I know things were different for women in the show and being the only woman also.
But I also felt like I could hold my own and nobody ever got away with anything. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I'm saying? So I think that, yes, I mean, there were certain things. But, you know, I just told this story last night. I was on Gilbert Gottfried's live podcast talking about doing my show. And he was asking me about being on The Tonight Show. And the very first time I was on The Tonight Show, first season of Taxi, I'm out there. I have a silk blouse on. I walk out and Johnny Carson looks at me. He goes, "Oh, it's cold backstage, huh? Okay." You would never do that now. So that felt more like a Me Too moment than anything that the guys,
exactly.
you know. Yeah. Then Louis De Palma was trying to get away
crazy.
With
it. We've come a long way.
We have. Thank God.
Throughout your career, you've played amazingly strong women, mm-hmm. from Elaine in Taxi to Ava in Evening Shade, even your most recent Broadway show as Sharon, the MILF, and getting the band back together. And mm-hmm. I would say even Marty is
kind
of
that
independent
edge. Sure.
Marty in Grease.
Yeah.
They're never just the wife or the girlfriend. Do you intentionally seek out these parts, or is it just people see you and they say, well, we got a strong female part?
I don't know whether it's because I'm the middle child of 6 kids, and so I was always kind of the swizzle stick. You know, I'm always the organizer. People walk into my family, goes to a restaurant or a party or comes to my house, and everybody wants to know, where have you put, you know, where are we sitting? You know, I'm always the cook. I'm just kind of like the one mm-hmm. with all the energy and organization. Yeah. Here. And so I think people sense a certain energy. And the thing is that when I don't play a character, I think it's something I get a certain kind of energy strength for free, you know, when you think about what actors get for free. Like Tom Hanks, maybe the most likable human being on the face of the planet, he gets likable for free, you know.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I don't know. I think maybe they people just cast me as that part. I've never played a character. I mean, I played a character in Carnal Knowledge, the play of Carnal Knowledge years ago at Pasadena Playhouse. And it was the same character that Anne Margaret played, which was a very vulnerable character. Mm-hmm. And so I had to really dig deep for that one, but I still had a certain energy about me.
You've appeared in many Broadway shows. What were some of your favorite parts?
Oh, I loved playing Roxy. I did 408 performances of Roxy between doing it on Broadway and doing it in Las Vegas. And that was great. And it was a great job to have at the time because my kids were little enough that I could give them a bath and almost put them to bed and then go to the theater. Yeah. And then after the theater, I went to an office and wrote a book because I was so energized from all that Fosse.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
Yeah, and then would get up with them and... So that was definitely a highlight. And I loved playing Annie Get Your Gun, and I did that on the road, you know, 22 cities in 22 cities in 30 weeks. And then I loved Tale of the Allergist's Wife. I actually got to play that part three times. I did it in Los Angeles, and I also did it in Bucks County with Marsha Mason. In Los Angeles, I did it with Caroline Aaron, who's on Marvelous Mrs. Maisel. And I did it with Rhea Perlman here on Broadway.
Yeah.
With Richard Kind, whom I saw last night as well.
Oh, my God.
So that was great. Kind. Yeah. I mean, every part has a different experience to it and a different character. Donna in Over Here was a great character. And I got that was the first Broadway show I got to originate a role.
Yeah.
So all seven of them, they're all great. Barbara and Social Security. Yeah. I love to work. So it always seems like the part comes up in my life at the right time for me. In my life, something I feel like I can bring to it.
In 2006 and 2007, you hosted the series Americans Ballroom Challenge.
Oh, yes.
Which was kind of like the precursor to Dancing with the Stars in a way.
Well, actually, that job, this is what happened. I loved doing that. I got to do America's Ballroom Challenge. And when I went on Entertainment Tonight to talk about that show, they asked me about Dancing with the Stars. And I went, oh, my gosh, I would love to do Dancing with the Stars. Are you kidding? And they used that as the tease on Entertainment Tonight. And the people at PBS got that America's Ballroom Challenge got upset with me for saying that.
It's wow.
We're competitive with them. How dare you?
No.
Blah, blah, blah. So that was it. My job was over.
Oh, no. But then you
that
got
took
to
me
go.
Years. Yeah,
but
later.
Then you got to go on Dancing with the Stars.
Yeah, 9 years later.
So what was it like to go from host to contestant on
well,
a
it was
dancing
two
show?
Completely different things. And I grew up in a dancing school, so, you know, it was kind of an easy fit. Yeah, Dancing with the Stars was... It's really challenging. I sing a song about it and show videos in my show. And
is
sing
it
a song
because
about it.
They have you dancing all day? Is
you
that...
don't have a day off. You do not take a day off unless you want to take one off. And as a competitor, you don't want to take a day off.
Right.
The pros are so competitive with one another that you really sort of get on their train in terms of their mentality about the other people, too. So it's a very interesting... Very interesting experience.
Yeah.
All the way around.
I can imagine. I can imagine. You were also on Celebrity Apprentice.
Twice. Yes.
And Live with Kelly, Grilling with the Stars.
well, I won that. Yeah.
Yeah, you won that, right? yeah. So what kept drawing you back to reality TV?
Oh, well, no. Grilling with the Stars was just one.
Oh, just one.
I cooked one dish.
Oh, okay.
Dish.
So Celebrity Apprentice twice.
Yeah.
What was the draw to be on Celebrity Apprentice?
Well, I loved the show when I first saw it. And then I was the first person they called about Celebrity Apprentice because I knew some of the people. And so I know Chuck LaBella, who kind of put the whole thing together. And I knew Mark Burnett. And I'd met Donald Trump a couple times before that. So they called me, and I loved the show. So I was like, yeah, I won. And I loved doing that show because I love to compete, but I also love that team, that kind of like, okay, you do this best, I do this best, you do that best, you know. I liked that process a lot because you're constantly using your brain. Uh-huh. And I like to use my brain as much as possible.
I think reality TV gets a bad rap because of the more sensational ones. But I love the ones where they're accomplishing things.
Oh, like, my gosh. Like Project Runway.
Project
I think
Runway.
That is like the quintessential show. I love that show so much.
I would love to be on The Amazing Race.
Yes, like, me
who
too.
Want to do The Amazing
Race? Me
too. Race, right?
Oh, my gosh. We are always saying in my family, you know, like which of the siblings, which of the who in the family would you want to team up with? And even though my husband speaks five languages, I would not want to be with him.
Well,
Too slow.
You know, I had a friend,
way too slow.
I had a friend and we were like, how are we going to get on The Amazing Race? And we did this outline of all the things that they would want. We're like, well, we're complete opposite. So, you know, we're sassy. That's good. We speak these many languages between us. So this is great. This
did
is how we're going to get. No,
they had
a thing in Central Park where they were taking auditions, but I couldn't. That was the one day I couldn't go. I think I was out of town or something.
Well, you can do it next time.
Yeah,
around.
Maybe next time. But,
I love that show.
But I would
I
love to do that.
Great.
I also love Top Chef.
Top Chef.
But
oh, my gosh.
But the shows where they're accomplishing something are great. I don't like the the ones where you get to marry a stranger.
No.
Like, why?
No, I don't, I hate to say because I adore Andy Cohen, but I'm not a housewife watcher either.
But I do like when it's a task, they're a team.
Me too.
They're accomplishing.
And you see the medal of somebody.
Yeah.
You know, I love that.
And even like Dancing with the Stars. It's amazing.
It's great. It's live.
That you learn a dance, especially for people who have never danced before.
Right.
And that they would go on TV in front of 7 million people and dance for the first time. That blows my mind.
Yeah. So, and get better and better and have that commitment and everything else. We had sort of an odd year because they had just lost their studio, their big studio where everybody hung out together. So we were all in different places all over town. And I think that the group didn't get to bond as much as you see in the other companies because they now have a designated building. And I was the first and only year where they didn't have... Everybody wasn't together.
Right.
It's kind of strange.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
You hosted a talk show on TV, and now you host a radio show.
No, I'm not doing the radio show anymore because I booked like 5 movies in a row. So I found myself carrying my Yeti to like hotel rooms and trying to book guests at midnight.
Oh my gosh.
And I thought, I can't do this anymore. Also, I didn't want to be political. And those things are so,
I guess nowadays it kind
you have to be.
Yeah. Was there a reason that you wanted to be on the other side of the microphone or the talk show couch?
I love to talk to people. I love naturally curious about other people and what they're like. And so, yeah, I always wanted to do that.
You're also famously known for your memory.
Yes.
We all know the episode in Black Mirror where people get a computer implanted so they can rewind their memories.
I guess I missed that episode because I don't need it.
So it's Black Mirror is a Netflix show about
technology. Of course.
And there is the one episode where everybody gets a chip so that you can rewind your memory, what happened to you, and replay it.
Right.
So that if you're having a fight with your husband, you can project, what happened.
I do this every day.
So obviously it doesn't turn out well in Black Mirror.
That's why I'm on my third and final.
But do you see this amazing memory as a gift?
Oh, totally. Totally. Mm-hmm. Yes. Yes, always a gift. It's something I was born with. I was a little girl, and they called me the memory girl, memory kid, Miss Memory, UNIVAC, things like that.
And, so even when you were very little?
Oh, very little. And people would say, tell it to Mary Lou because she'll remember. You know, Mary Lou's the family historian. Tell it to her, you know, things like that. And people would say to my parents, what's with this kid and her memory? She remembers, you know, everything about my last time I saw you guys, you know, things like that. So I loved it. I mean, I fell asleep at night saying, what did I do when I was exactly my little brother's age to the day? I do that with my kids. Last night I was doing that. I was thinking, okay, what was I doing to the day when I was my son Nick's age and Joey's age to the day, you know? And Candace Cameron Bure, you know, I do all these Hallmark movies with her. She plays my daughter, but we have the same birthday years apart. So I'll think like, what was I doing when I was, this is the day I had 2 little kids. My kids were 3 months and 21 months on this day. I was in Phoenix shooting a movie. She had her kids super young. I had mine super old, so they're almost the same ages. And I always say to her, you have a 3-month-old right now. And she's like, oh, my gosh, I can't believe it. You know, so
that's incredible. I can't imagine what that feels like, that you can go fish a memory out of your
head. Oh, here's – It's
incredible.
I can't imagine not being able to do this. That's my normal. Yeah. I sing a song about it in the show because I talk about it. Because everybody, more than anything else I've ever done in my entire life, people want to know about my memory. They talk to me about it. They stop me in the airport. They throw dates at me.
I'm just curious, is it photographic or is it
photographic?
Facts? So like we were talking earlier about this party that you were at.
Yeah.
Do you remember, do you see the party?
I'm in the party.
You're in the party.
I'm in the party.
And you see the people?
Yeah.
Or? Wow.
Yeah. And what they were wearing, what I was wearing.
Do you still also remember their names, if they tell you their names?
Yeah.
Or do you remember the faces?
No. If I know them and stuff, I mean, you know, I usually remember all those little details. Some things come up right away, and then some things might take a little bit longer, and I'll think about them. And,
That's incredible.
You know what's so funny is I knew I had the best memory in my family, and then when I was 18, I realized I had the best memory of the people I knew, but I had no idea how rare this is. It's painful to me that people, according to statistics, people remember 8 to 11 events within any given year, and I cannot believe that. That was... maybe the most shocking thing I learned about memory through this whole process. Because they wired us. They put us, they wired us. They've put us through MRIs. They've asked us questions and they see what fires up. And then they took 300 measurements of our brains and they found 9 areas 10 times larger than the normal brain.
But it's there's only 12 of you, right?
Well,
or something
there's
like that?
11 of us in this 1%, in this certain percentile, in the 99th percentile, and then the percentiles change. But, mm-hmm. you know, they found a few more, but it's sort of a gradient.
Wow. And you also consulted on the TV show Unforgettable, which
yes.
is a woman who has a superior memory.
Yeah.
What was your role within that show?
I was a consultant, so they always sent me scripts, and they would call me and say, you know, and I would comment on the scripts because I'll give you an example. There was Jane Curtin played a part in it, and she had been kind of a detective years before, and she was a forensic specialist now and stuff. And so she talked about one little girl that she knew. She was talking about knowing this child, and she was carrying a Welcome Back Cotter lunchbox, and this was 1975, blah, blah, blah. And I called them. I said, Welcome Back Cotter didn't go on the air till September of 75, so she wouldn't have a lunchbox that soon. It would have to be 76 that you did that, you know. And then another time, the two lead characters, if you remember, they dated in the past. So they were talking about having been at a party together the weekend of July 16th, 1999. I called them and I said, you can't have the party that date without Carrie, the character, Carrie mentioning what was in the news all over the television screens. I said, do you know what was happening that weekend? They said, no. And I said, that was the weekend John F. Kennedy Jr.'s plane went down. So that would definitely be something that she would discuss about that party. Like it was on television or mm-hmm. that's what, you know, sort of framework it there. And they said, oh, no, we'll change the date. We don't want to get into all of that. Yeah. But it was things like that.
Oh,
I was
okay.
constantly catching things.
But I think you could do that for almost every show.
Yeah,
because
probably.
Every show, there's probably. Scripts with continuity.
Well, now it's so easy to find things, too.
Yeah.
Though. Yeah.
Amazing. So you're also an author.
Yeah.
Most
ten
of your
books.
10 books. Most of them... health and wellness
yes.
books. Tell us how you came to that and these topics and why they're important to you.
Well, I lost my parents very young. I was 17 when my father died of a heart attack. He was 52. I found myself eating my feelings, putting on a lot of weight, not really, you know, just really in a depression about his death. And then when my mother took ill with arthritis, because his death had such an impact on her life, and she went from seeming so young and vibrant and teaching dancing, she ended up full-blown rheumatoid arthritis, breaking her hip, ended up losing her leg. I mean, it was horrible. My mother went through so much. She suffered so much because of arthritis.
Yeah.
And just unaddressed issues. So when she was in the hospital, and I was auditioning for Taxi, I was going back and forth. When she was in the hospital, I thought, if she gets out of here alive, I'm going to learn everything I can about the human body and save her life. And if she dies, I'm going to learn everything about the human body and save my life and my brothers and sisters. So when she passed away, I became this obsessed student of health. And I went to medical doctors and nutritionists and libraries and the Bodhi tree, if you know what that is in LA.
Mm-hmm,
and I took human anatomy classes at UCLA. And I put together a program that worked for me. And I ended up forever losing 54 pounds, never went back to the high weight that I was at one time, lowered my cholesterol over 100 points, and just started living this lifestyle, you know, totally plant-based, gave up dairy mm-hmm. products August 15th, 1979, which is what I consider my health birthday, a Wednesday.
Wonderful.
Oh, and you know, you want to hear something funny? Okay, so I decided to give up dairy products because I went to see a nutritionist who said, you should give up dairy. And I thought, okay, well, where do I start? I'll go to the little kind of funky natural food store, Air One. And who do I run into right in front of it as I park my car? Jeff Goldblum. So Jeff takes me inside and he walks me around because he was already on a health journey.
Wow.
And yeah, so see, all roads lead to, so yeah, that was August 15th, 1979, a Wednesday. So I got into this and I started working with people because once I could cross-connect all of the information mm-hmm. that I was reading and absorbing, I thought, okay, I'm going to help other people. And so then I was asked to write a book. I wrote my first health book while I was doing Chicago, putting on eyelashes at night, making tapes, going, the evils of dairy products. You know? And the book came out, went on the New York Times bestseller list, and one thing led to the next.
I love it. And you've helped so many people
Thank
with
you.
That awareness. But you were early in the trend with the books and the lifestyle change.
Yeah. In 98, my book came out, and when it first came out, everybody was shocked that I was talking about no dairy products and things like that, you know, and gluten-free and all that. Yeah.
It's amazing what works for different people, too.
Well, we're all basically animals that are not supposed to be drinking the breast milk of another animal.
Yeah, I'm not a huge dairy fan at all. And it, to me, it always seemed like, well, I'm not a baby cow.
Yeah, I know. No. I always say, all dairy's supposed to do is turn a 50-pound calf into a 300-pound cow in 6 months.
Yeah.
So if those are your aspirations, hey, knock yourself out.
Yeah. I've been doing yoga for a while, and when I started, it was like a magic cure.
Yeah.
It solved so many
things
that I thought were unsolvable.
Sure.
It was pretty incredible. Just even that one change in my life.
Oh, no. And it can be, you know, small incremental changes. I always say time is on your side, because if you start something now, a year from now, you're going to be so much better.
Yeah. You've had an amazingly varied career: stage, screen, author, host, dancer. Is there one area that's your favorite?
Besides being a mother, which is like my favorite. You know, I love all of it. I think it's the way I grew up, having so many different businesses in my house. You know, I feel like I have to wear a lot of hats, and I have to swizzle stick around and do a lot of different things. I would hate to feel like I had to give up any of them.
Is there something you haven't done that you would like to do?
Well, it's funny. 2 years ago, I said, I want to do another Broadway show, but I want a song on an album. And now I have that. So now I think I want another Broadway show, but more songs on the album.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm excited.
I
love being on stage. I think that's, if I had to pick one medium, that would definitely be my favorite.
Is there a dream role that you have that you would love to play one day?
You mean that's already been done, like in a revival?
Yeah, or, you know, somebody whose life you'd like to adapt and play.
or any. I have to think about that. Yeah, maybe that's why it hasn't happened yet, because I haven't manifested. I don't know. Yeah. I don't know. I have to think about that.
I love what you just said about manifesting, because you gave us that example earlier where you said, oh, I'd love to be on Dancing with the Stars, and
it happened. And oh, no, I really believe in all of that. You know, yes, I mean, the universe for things.
For our first episode, we talked to the amazing Broadway star Norm Lewis.
Oh,
and
great.
He was the first African American Phantom, but in a way he manifested that.
Yes.
Because he went on stage at some talk back or some forum, and they said, you know, what would be your dream role? And he said, I'd love to play the Phantom one day.
Yeah.
And in the audience were the casting directors.
Oh my gosh,
and
that's great.
So I just love it. You know, you have to put it out into the
world.
You
do. You know what I think? Because I have that personality. I think the part of Mame, it's time for a revival. Mm-hmm. That would be a great part for me. Have that energy.
Exactly.
And I love it. I have two sons, so.
Making
you know.
Things happen for the nephew.
Yes.
Oh my God. Mm-hmm. Your show on March 4th at Fine Science 54 Below. Tell us about how that came about. How did you decide to do a cabaret show? What it's about? All of that.
It's definitely about my life, and it's about different memories that I have. And I right away set up the memory that I have, and I sing a little song about it. And I take like all the different highlights of my life and sing about it or talk about it or whatever, whether it's Greece or Chicago or getting the band back together or Taxi or Dancing with the Stars, a bunch of things. And so I wanted to do it, and because I love to tell stories and because I have so many details, I thought, okay, this would be really fun to put into a show and to sort of, you know, put it out there for people. And so it's something I've always thought of doing, and I've done a lot of different benefits and sung different songs for benefits. So somebody said, oh, you should put a show together. So I did.
And do you think you might do it again, not even just here,
They've already
elsewhere?
Asked me to come back, because they, you know, were like
Of course.
Sold out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But maybe take it on the road or do
it in
LA.
Well, I'm already booked in San Francisco and in Palm Springs.
Oh, fantastic.
And,
San
Diego.
Good. So we're seeing the world premiere.
You're seeing you know what? Nothing like starting in New York. What happened was I was supposed to do it four other places. I'm doing it in Bucks County, too, I think in June. I was supposed to do it at four different places before coming to 54 Below. And I got two movies, so I had to push those dates to the back.
Yeah.
And so now this is my first.
Oh, great.
Nothing like starting at New York.
Yeah, well, we love it. That's how, you know, Broadway's shows start. You start in New York, and then
you take
it on the road.
Yeah.
Well, Mary Lou, thank you so much for joining us today.
It's been fun. Great questions. You do your homework.
It's been really fun to have you. And your show is March 4th, Fine Science 54 Below. Tickets and info at 54below.com.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but
yeah.
Not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.